whether you're already financially successful or are well on your path to get there. Chances are, the highest expense that you're going to have every year will be your, not your house, not your cars, not your vacations, not your grocery bill. Chances are, the one largest expense you're going to have will be your income tax and other taxes that you're going to pay. In fact, for me, all of my other expenses combined are a little bit less than my tax bill. It's an astonishing amount of money that goes to Uncle Sam, and I love this country, and I'm happy to have this problem, but as we have recently discovered, there's a way to lower the tax bill that is legal, that is ethical, and that is the right thing to do. On this episode, I got to sit down and interview my friend Moshe Amsel of Dream Builder Financial and also of Profit with Law, who also happens to be a tax strategist. He is a CPA by training, an enrolled agent with IRS, so he knows how tax code works. He knows a lot about taxes and tax strategies that will help you significantly, legally, and ethically lower your tax bill. Tune into this episode, listen to it, and if you find a lot of value, and I believe you will, even if your tax bill is not outrageous yet, reach out, connect with Moshe or with another tax strategist to learn about how to, in the future, lower your tax bill. Or maybe it's a life-changing thing that you can do for yourself and for your family today. Enjoy the episode.
You're listening to the Grow Law Firm podcast, where each guest shares actionable, practical ideas with you on how to get more clients, expand your reach, and grow your law firm's revenue and profit. Here's your host, Sasha Burson.
Hi there. I have a small but really meaningful favor to ask you. You know, I watch At The Stats on our YouTube channel and Spotify channel, wherever most people listen and watch our podcast, and I see that over 80% of everybody who listens to it regularly is not a subscriber. I'm asking you to subscribe to this channel. And the reason for that is my mission and the mission of my team is to help as many small law firm owners to learn how to transform their law firms into better businesses. And so they in turn enjoy better lives. When you hit subscribe button, you tell these platforms that this is content worth listening, worth viewing. And they in turn will show it to many other small law firm owners. And hopefully help me fulfill our mission of helping them create a better business and enjoy better lives. So would you please do me this favor? It would mean the world to me, and hit the subscribe button. And my promise to you is that I will continue to work hard at creating good content with practical ideas that help you and your teams grow better law firms. Thank you.
Welcome to another episode of Grow Law Podcast. I have a great guest with me here today. Moshe Amsel has graced us with his presence now for the third time. Moshe, welcome to the podcast.
Sasha, I can't believe it's three times. Wow. I'm honored to be invited back for the third time. There's so much to share. And, you know, we can have 100 conversations and we wouldn't cover it all. I'm even confused sometimes with how much we offer our clients and what we do in the marketplace. But in past episodes, you and I had conversations about my why. Like, why did I start my business? What am I after? What am I doing? And people, you can go to profitwithlaw.com and just check out the about page. And my whole story is there. And if you want to reference previous recordings where we talked about it. But I am trying to help people create generational wealth. And generational wealth, I believe, gets a adrenaline injection from business owners, because business owners have the ability to pour out a ton of cash from their business. The challenge that we're running up against with a lot of our clients is the U.S. government and the state you live in wants to take a piece of that, right? So they become generationally wealthy with you along the way. And we believe that there's a way to build wealth where you're not just... On the business side, we want to get you to a 30 to 40% profit margin. And we do a lot of work on a fractional CFO side of our business to do that, to help business owners operate at that level of profitability. But then on the take-home side, we want to get you to 90% take-home pay from that. We want to eliminate, right now taxes are probably eating 40 to 50% of that number. And we want to help our clients eliminate that and get it down to 10%. And that's just another piece of the puzzle of what we're doing for our audience.
So this is a major piece of the puzzle. And before we hit the record button, I confided in you that last year, we had a very successful year. My partner and I both looked at our expenses. And we were stunned to determine that our total tax bill for each one of us exceeded almost all of our household expenses combined, like our housing, our cars, our travel, our groceries combined were less than what we're paying to the government, which was a stunning revelation to us. And we should have looked at this sooner, but here we were early 2026 looking at it and saying, we love this country. We're happy to pay our fair share, but are we, because we're just writing kind of a blank check to the government. We're not actually looking at it and saying, are there any meaningful strategies that are fully legal, because we do not believe in breaking law in any way possible, fully legal that we can implement to defer some of our taxes or to lower our tax bill. I know that you're a multifaceted person. When you look at your LinkedIn profile, you're CPA. You're an enrolled agent of IRS, which is a fancy way of saying that you know how tax code works. You're a paramedic. You lead Profit with Law, where you help law firm owners build generational wealth, which is the subject that you led with. And I'm like, we got to talk about tax strategies, because the audience of this podcast are people who either aspire to get to the point where their tax bill is very significant because of how much money they're making, or they're already there. And just like my partner and I, they may be looking at their tax bill and saying, can this be real? Are we actually sending more money to the IRS than we're spending on our families? And that's why I want to talk about what are relevant, fully legal strategies that law firm owners or other business owners can deploy that would lower their tax bill and allow them to build that generational wealth in a shorter period of time.
Yeah, Sasha, this is a great question. And I mean, we can probably speak on this podcast for weeks and not cover everything that needs to be covered. So let me instead talk about bird's eye view concepts that I think when you kind of think of it that way will help you to understand it a little bit better. But I have to start with, I mean, lawyers will understand this answer, this part of the answer. I have to start with a disclaimer, right? Everybody's situation is unique. There's no two people walking the face of this earth that have exactly identical situations in every shape or form, every step of the way, right? So I'm going to share the concepts, but if you really want somebody to set eyes on your situation and look at it, you have to have a one-on-one consult with a professional like us, right? Like, you have to be talking. And one of the things you said in the green room was that we quickly came to realize that these strategies are not DIY strategies. And the reality is that I don't believe any part of the tax code is DIY. As a matter of fact, I spent a tax season working for TurboTax, and I picked up clients because I went above and beyond for their clients, and you know, and they ended up seeking me out. They found my name on the bottom of their tax return the next year, reached out and was like, "Hey, can you do our taxes for us?" But the reality is that your situation is unique, and it requires its own set of eyes to look on it. But let's first talk about what the opportunity is. So the concept of tax, that you're paying taxes on the income taxes on the money that your business makes, we all understand how that works, right? Like there's a increasing amount of that you pay, the more that you make. It caps out at the top of the table. You know, 37% is the most that you pay. Plus, if you're in a state, like I'm in the state of New York, where a New Yorker could pay as much as 11%, a Californian could pay as much as 12% on top of that. So we're talking about 50% of your income at the highest level of income that you're going to literally fork over and pay in taxes, and that's only income tax. That's not including your Social Security and Medicare taxes, which are calculated off of a paycheck that you pay yourself. So there's three basically different buckets that I like to put tax strategy in. One is, how do I shift expenses so that they're being taken on the business side instead of the personal side? So that's like, if there's a way for me to, some of the well-known ones here are the Augusta rule, which is, it's just named after the case that it comes from. But basically, you can rent your house to your S corporation business up to 14 days and not have to claim the rental income on your personal income tax return. So let's say we could value a rental day of your house for $4,000 a day. We can back that up with paperwork, right? And you have a monthly meeting in your home, and then twice a year you host a party for your employees. And you know that's 14 days. You rent the house to the business for 14 days. Now you have 4,000 times 14, so that's $52,000 that we now take as an expense. But we didn't have the expense because we already are paying that. So that's the best. Like the ultimate tax strategy is, how do I shift more of my personal expenses to be business expenses legally? And there's a few other things like that, like your home office deduction, your auto. We do a webinar that we do regularly, and in there I show a case study of how we got an attorney a free car. And it was not any free car, like a Lexus, a hybrid SUV, like an $80,000 car. And they still save $30,000 in their taxes without any advanced strategies, just by implementing home office deduction, accelerating depreciation on a vehicle, the Augusta rule, and then prepaying some expenses in the next year, because you can pay expenses up to 12 months in advance, and lowering their income below the QBI. So QBI is the qualified business income deduction, which in 2017, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was introduced. That's the first Trump tax act. And he wanted a flat tax for corporations. So corporations are taxed at a flat 21%. That was unfair to pass-through entities, S-corps, partnerships, and Schedule C filers, because you're all taxed on personal income tax rates. So your tax rate could go up to 37%, but theirs is flat at 21%. How's that fair? So what they did was is they introduced this concept of the first 20% of your income on your business side, QBI, can be taken off of the amount before we calculate your taxes. So if you made $1 million, we take off $200,000. Now you made only $800,000. Now we calculate your taxes, and that evened the playing field. For some reason, they thought that doctors, lawyers, accountants, and other special entities, SSTBs, specified service trades or businesses, would take advantage of this and go from W-2 employees to S-corps in order to avoid taxation. So what they did was is they put a max on the QBI deduction for those types of businesses. So there's a cliff. And if you earn more than that, last year was $494,000. So if you earn more than $494,000 as an attorney, you lose the QBI deduction. So you're automatically paying another, you know, income tax and another 20% of your income just by going over that number. So if we can get you below that number, we can keep the QBI, which is very valuable. In this particular case study that we shared, it was the equivalent of almost $40,000 in taxes. So that was half the cost of the car right there. So there's the basic strategies that we want to implement on the business side. And this, most accountants should know this. And if they're in some sort of tax planning engagement with you, you should be aware of it too. But this is just the beginning, the tip of the iceberg. So it's basically taking something we're already spending money on and turning it into a business expense. The next bucket is taking the money that we made and reallocating it into some investment for us, which we can then take as a deduction or reduce our income in this year. And the one that we all know about is, 401k, which we know that an employer can put away, you know, but it's misleading, because as a sole practitioner, you could put away up to $54,000 a year into a 401k. But the moment you have employees, it becomes very complicated, because the same rules that apply to you as an employee apply to them as an employee. So if you want to give that maximum amount to yourself, you also have to give it to them. That becomes very expensive to do, and most employers don't want to do that. So that becomes a strategy that you lose when you start hiring staff. There is something called a cash balance or cash value plan, which is a pension plan that runs alongside your 401k. And only certain financial providers provide this. You're not going to find it at your Fidelity and stuff like that. And that allows the owner to put away another $200,000 pre-tax that's in their own portfolio. That is money that's now can be invested in the market or whatever is going to happen with it. And you have that ability. You could also employ your spouse, and they can also get. Now you do have to give your employees something, but you're able to have different classes of employees, which means that you can give most of your employees a minimal amount while you're able to put that $200,000 away. And of course, what you're putting away for them is still an expense. So it's not really costing you what it's costing you. It's costing you that minus the tax saving. Those are what I would call foundational strategies. Those are the ones that if you listen to a podcast, you'll hear, oh, you need to be an S corp, you need to put yourself on payroll with reasonable compensation, save on this, on the Social Security and Medicare taxes, you know, take advantage of your home office, take advantage of the Augusta rule, all that stuff, right? Then there's another whole world that exists, and most accountants don't know about it because most accountants are serving clients that are, at most, they're making $300,000 a year, which is where these strategies first begin to make sense. And that's the advanced strategy bucket. In the advanced strategy bucket, we're looking at opportunities, and this is where, and people are like, well, how is this legal? How was Donald Trump able to stand up there during a debate next to Hillary Clinton and tell the world, I pay $0 in taxes because I'm smart, right? Like, whether you're a fan of him or not, you got to be sitting there saying, this guy's worth multi-millions of dollars. How is he paying $0 in taxes?
Billions.
Right? And the answer is, not because he's smart. He probably didn't come up with this himself, but because he hired smart people who helped him with this, right?
He follows right? the law.
So, but he didn't do, and well, we don't know. I presume he didn't do anything illegal. I presume that he followed the code because I also know of strategies that could get your tax bill to zero. Now, I, as a practitioner, don't recommend our clients get to zero because in the lower end of what you're paying in taxes, there's a lot of value in that you're paying 37% plus the max in your state. If we get you into the 20% bracket, there's a lot of value in paying that there because at some point you're going to pay the piper. At some point there's going to be taxes paid. Let's maximize the 20% bucket as much as we can so that we're never paying 37%. These advanced strategies are they all are different, but they're all basic in the same concept, which is the government wants to encourage investment and activity in certain areas. And in order to do that, creates tax benefits for those industries to accelerate the investment in those industries. For example, the government wanted oil and gas exploration to happen on U.S. soil. We wanted to increase our output. We wanted to be an exporter, not an importer of oil. So there was a tax benefit introduced that allowed you to accelerate the depreciation of the investment in an oil rig or in the exploration. And it also allowed you normally in a business, if you want to go buy a business and you evaluate 100 businesses, you could be, you know, 17 steps into the process. You could have invested $5,000-$10,000 into exploring that business. If you don't make the acquisition, that money is not a business expense. You cannot take it as a deduction on the next business that you end up buying, right? So in oil and gas exploration, the rules are different. If you dig a hole and you don't find oil, you can still take that expense. So oil and gas is just one example, right? Solar is another example. Real estate is another example. There's a lot of industries where there is another one that's thrown around a lot is opportunity zones, right? So there's these zones. What's that?
What are those?
So those are specific areas in the country where the government wants to increase the economic situation of that area. So the government gives investors in that area, so people who invest in real estate or build businesses there, they give them specific tax benefits to do that. Now, when you look at it on the surface, you look at these opportunities, you say, well, I'm a lawyer. I don't do oil and gas. I don't do solar. I'm not going to move my office from where it is to some neighborhood that's full of shuttered windows and gangs on the corners to get a tax credit, right? But if you're doing that, you're thinking about this the wrong way. Because what if we can find a way for you to invest some dollars and become a partner or an owner in a business that has these benefits? What if we can take the benefits that are accelerated in that business and accelerate it to you as a partner or shareholder? And what if there's value in that investment that's beyond the tax benefits? Because if you invest in something just for the tax benefits, that kind of is skirting the law, right? Like, it might be legal, but when the IRS looks at it, you have to have entered it with a reasonable intent of making money, right? So what if we actually can find opportunities where you can put money in but get more out as a deduction? So what if you could put up $100,000 and get a $500,000 deduction? And what if you could do that on three different opportunities?
Give an example how that would work in real life.
Okay. So the most basic example is real estate that people can understand. And then I'll give you a deeper example, right? But real estate, the government gives you the ability to depreciate the asset on a certain time frame, right? Now that depreciation is really going to last much longer. In other words, you buy a building, right? Say you buy a building for $10 million. Well, that building is, you could depreciate it over 27 and a half years, but it'll probably be standing for 100 years, right? So you're getting that depreciation up front on top of all your other expenses. So when you collect rent on that building, you might be cash flow positive because you're just paying a mortgage on that building, but you're not actually making money because when you add the depreciation along the other expenses on paper, you're losing money. So your expenses exceed the investment. Now, real estate is a poor example in that you can only book those expenses against other income if you're a real estate professional. So real estate is a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity for many other reasons. The biggest one is that all these opportunities are basically a way of kicking the can down the road. So basically, we're accelerating some expense today that eventually we're going to have to pay back, right? So eventually, it's going to, you know, over time, it's going to come back to you as income in some way, shape, or form. So with real estate, you can continue to perpetually move it along by moving the basis of your property to the next property if you sell it. And then if you hold it long enough, you pass away, hand it off to your heirs, and it has this accelerated basis that happens. It's called a stepped-up basis, and it becomes valued the date of your death, and that's as if they bought it at that dollar amount. So real estate is very, very desirable for people who their long-term vision is generational wealth creation. But it's also more complicated because you have to spend 750 hours a year in real estate in order to be deemed a real estate professional. So you cannot take losses that offsets other income unless you're a real estate professional. There's ways to do this. I mean, first of all, if you have a spouse that's not working, right? Like, okay, you might not be able to get 750 hours, but you do file a joint tax return. Your spouse could potentially spend 750 hours on real estate. There's also other ways, like if you're a professional who supports the real estate industry, so if you're doing real estate transactions, real estate litigation, guess what? You're a real estate professional. So easy way to get that covered. But there's other buckets that we can go into. So I'll give you another example, and this is a more complicated, complex one. And you told me that I didn't need to go into the how, but I'll just give you the broad strokes. So basically, there is a special rule in the code that allows a individual or a company that is doing foreign currency trading to accelerate or book their losses at a faster pace than normal. So normally, if you buy and sell stuff, there's wash loss rules. Those rules all don't exist in foreign currency trading. Now, foreign currency hedge funds, they do millions of transactions a day, and they generate a ton of losses and gains. And they have a lot of losses that they need to put somewhere. So the opportunity is basically for you to become a partner in a business. So you form an entity where you're a partner and they are a 1% partner in that business. Now, we can't develop, if you put up $100,000, we can't take a loss of $500,000, you don't have enough basis. If you take a loss of $500,000, it's in excess of the basis in the business. That's not kosher. You would end up, it would offset, you would have $400,000 in income that would offset that. However, if you bring debt to the table, it will. So the strategy is basically you form this partnership, you bring a line of credit to the table. Now, this is all like this entity does it all for you, right? So it's not like, oh, I need to now go to the bank, get a line of credit. No. We line up a $400,000 line of credit next to it, so you have $500,000 in basis. We then generate $500,000 in losses that gets passed to this partnership. You get a K-1 with $500,000 in losses. You put up $100,000. Now there's a piece of that $100,000 that's an investment that continues to produce over time. So perpetually for the next 15 years, you're earning 10% a year on that. And that is the reason for going into this investment. But what you get up front on paper is you get that immediate write-off in the first year. And when you do that, so you basically, you put up $100,000, you have $500,000 in losses. What that translates into for you is a $250,000 tax savings. So you only had to put up $100,000. You now have an investment, a part of that $100,000. And now on top of that, you just got an extra $150,000 in your pocket, which you can do whatever you please with, right? So there's a number of these different opportunities. There's opportunities in oil and gas and solar and foreign currency trading in real estate. There was also, I mean, there's opportunities that come and go. So there was an opportunity that ended a couple of years ago that had to do with a certain type of municipal bond that allowed you to accelerate an expense against it. Some of these opportunities are run by, you know, companies that they only have a certain need to fill, you know, up to a certain amount, right? Like you have an opportunity to invest in oil and gas, right? When that particular drill or rig is paid for, they don't need anybody else. So it's really important to, if you're going to be doing these advanced strategies, it's important to be aligned with somebody throughout the year. You want to have a provider that you're working with for the entire 12 months of the year, because these opportunities come and then they leave, right? So if you didn't take advantage of it, you lost out, right? It's gone. And that's, you know, like the thing that we have a hardest time overcoming is, like, somebody, we have a conversation now, it's February 3rd, we're recording this, right? I don't know when you're releasing it, but we're recording it on February 3rd. We're going to go out into the marketplace and we're going to have this conversation. And everyone's going to say, I'm just dealing my taxes from last year. I'll worry about 2026 in November. And that would be a huge mistake, because these opportunities are not, they're not going to be there. When we had people come in November or December, we had one or two strategies we can give them instead of 5 or 10, mm-hmm. right? And that, it, you know, it's inventory. It just comes and goes. And you want to be poised and ready to take advantage of it when it happens. We make the process really simple. We do it like a tax assessment. We charge for that. We present you a plan of how we would get you the tax savings that we're showing you. And then you can choose to use it, or, you know, with us, or to go somewhere else and work with somebody else to get that done. But at the end of the day, wouldn't it be worth at least knowing that there's an opportunity, right? If you're paying $100,000, if you're paying $50,000, if you're paying $250,000 in taxes, you know, I have a client that's paying multiple millions in taxes, right? They're a client not through the tax side of the business. We're working on that, right? But imagine if those multi-millions was in their pocket instead of in the IRS coffers, right? So these opportunities are there. They're there because the government is trying to drive certain behavior, certain investments, certain areas. And it's basically just using the system for what it was created. It's not taking advantage. It's not cheating. You know, I recently heard a friend of mine, Adam Williams, on another podcast, and he was saying, like, he was putting down this concept of, actually, no, it wasn't Adam. It was what's his name? Alex Ramosi's partner in acquisition.com. Forgetting his name. He has a very popular podcast. He just did an episode and he talked about the fact that we call these tax loopholes. And he's like, that name alone gives you the idea that we're, like, taking advantage of something that's not supposed to be there. And the reality is that that's not true, right? Like, it's there on purpose. Congress very purposely put that in place, right? Like, they signed the bill. And the purpose was because we're trying to drive behavior. We're trying to drive investment in those areas. And that's exactly what you're doing. You're investing in those areas and you're taking advantage of it. And the tax advantage is being given to you because you're following exactly what they wanted you to do.
Yeah. Great points. Let me simplify some of the things that you said, because from what I know, having had thousands of conversations with thousands of law firm owners, a lot of them don't like meth. Many of them would tell me, I went to law school because I didn't want to deal with meth. Yet meth is a fact of life and something that you as a business owner, operator, probably deal with on a daily basis. Nothing about tax planning and tax strategies is illegal. In fact, it is all legal. Every tax strategist that I ever had a pleasure of talking with, including yourself, Moshe, here, follows the law to the T. There is no gray. It's all black and white. There are multiple laws that are written by Congress that, as you rightfully pointed out, supposed to create certain type of behavior, certain type of, usually investment type of behavior, that should you participate in that, should you do this behavior, you are going to either defer your taxes or you're going to reduce your taxes. It's all perfectly legal. Your CPA probably knows very little about it or nothing about it. How do I know? I've been a business owner operator for nearly 25 years. I've had multiple CPAs work on my multiple businesses. Exactly none of those CPAs have ever suggested anything that you have mentioned. In fact, none of them have ever talked to me about reducing my tax bill at all. Their job is usually, let's look at your P&L, let's look at your cash flow statement, let's see where you started the year with your balance sheet, let's see where you ended the year with your balance sheet. Now we're going to prepare your 1120 for the business, 1040 for personal. You're done. Here's how much you owe me. Here's how much you owe to the IRS, or here's how much IRS owes you. Done and done. See you in 12 months. And you cannot blame. If you're thinking that your CPA is doing something wrong by you, you're thinking about it wrong. CPA is not a tax strategist. If you want to legally reduce your tax bill, you go to a tax strategist. It's like choosing the right doctor for the right problem. I am of a mindset that owing a lot of taxes is a blessing. It's a sign that you're doing well. Paying to the max is a sign of poor financial IQ, which myself and my partner are currently guilty of. We simply pay to the max. We had no tax strategies ever deployed. So except for the Augusta rule, we do conduct regular meetings in our respective homes. We've had done this for years. But aside from that, there's absolutely nothing else. Our taxes are as vanilla as you can imagine, and we pay astonishing amount of money to the IRS. We do not pay state income tax because we're blessed to live in the state of Florida where there's zero income tax, which is a tax strategy in its own. If you choose to move to one of 10 or 11 states that charge no income tax, you significantly reduce your tax bill. There are three buckets that you mentioned where tax strategies reside. One of them is shifting your personal expenses to your business side, where possible, wherever it's legal. The other one is maximizing tax deferral strategies, such as having the 401k. And I believe you can have 401k and IRA at the same time. Now, you may be thinking, yes, you cannot. You're shaking your head like you cannot. You cannot have both.
Well, I mean, very limited. Very limited. If you have a 401k, you know, and your income is above a certain amount, you can't put into an IRA at all. If your income is below
What's
that amount,
threshold?
Then you can
What's
put up to 6,500. Now you're putting me on the spot. I got to look it up, but my guess is it's around 185,000 in that range.
So if you're a law firm owner and operator and you're doing in excess of $3 million, $4 million in revenue, and if you do not have any partners, there is a very strong probability that you're making high six figures or low seven figures. This stuff, all of this stuff applies to you. Chances are your tax bill, unless you're deploying some of these tax planning strategies, chances are your tax bill is well into six figures. Like on $1 million income, even in the state of Florida, there's a high probability that you're going to spend 25% of it or $250,000 across multiple taxes. So deploying the strategies, some simple, some not, will probably cut or defer your tax bill very significantly. And when you talk about creating generational wealth, my understanding is that to do so, deferring taxes gives you a significant boost and significantly shortens the timeline toward achieving that generational wealth. Did I miss anything?
Yeah, I want to add one caveat to that, right? So I want people to understand why. Why does shifting the tax burden down the road give me a leg up on generational wealth? And it all has to do with understanding the time value of money, right? So if I get an extra $500,000 in my pocket today and I deploy that and I earn 10%, 12% on that money for the next 20 years, mm-hmm. and ultimately I end up paying the taxes 20 years from now, I just had access to that, not just the money that I got, but the growth of that money over those 20 years before I ultimately paid the piper with paying that tax bill. Mm-hmm. So that's really like the opportunity is the power of what you do with the money that you have in tax savings. And this is another area that we plan to grow into and we don't currently offer, which is helping attorneys to explore these investment opportunities. Because what are you going to do with that $500,000 that you get in your pocket, right? In year one, you might have a bunch of stuff to take care of, right? Like in year two, you can only up-level your life to a certain extent. At some point, right, if you don't focus on it, you're not going to create generational wealth. That money is just going to go to things that you don't need. And or it could even be supporting charities, right? Like you could be unintentionally doing things that feels good today, but ultimately when you're 20 years, 30 years, 40 years from now, and you're looking back in your life, like, what did I create? It's not going to be what you wanted, right? So you have to be very intentional with that and approach this with a plan. So step one is let's get a bunch of money back in your pocket. Step two is let's have a plan of how you're going to deploy this so that it's smart, so that it's growing, so that you're creating opportunities for later. One of the ways that I had this looked at or I heard this talked about on a recent podcast I thought was really good is to look at the income that you can produce separately from the wealth that you can create. And the game that we play is not to necessarily maximize our income, because if we only focus on maximizing our income, that helps us today. And that can change next year. Every year is different. But if we focus on purchasing assets that are going to continue to produce for us, we're shifting the burden of earning income from us to our assets. And that's what creates wealth. Creating wealth is a compiling a collection of assets that are going to produce income over time. And we basically remove the burden from us as the operator, us being the one that is in control of making that income happen. And that's the game that we need to start playing when we have excess money. When we're deploying these tax strategies and creating more money in our pockets, it's not so I can go buy a Ferrari. If you want to, you can. But if you want to change your life, take the same $250,000 and go buy yourself a quad, you know, rental property. And, you know, and now you've got an asset that appreciates over time, is going to cash flow year over year. It can make your Ferrari monthly payment if you want, right? I'm not saying go borrow money to drive a car, but you get the idea, right? Like, let's focus and start building assets. There's so many attorneys I run into who are doing very, very well. But when I look at their personal portfolio, I'm like, where did all this money go? What have you done? Like, you've been successful for X number of years, and all you have to show for it is a bunch of vacations in Europe, a vacation home, and that's it. You've got no income-producing assets. There's so many opportunities of what you can do. At the most basic level, invest in the stock market. From there, you can invest in real estate. You can invest in another business. You can partner into a business. There's so many businesses out there that need capital, right? Like, you can be the capital for that. You could be smart about it. Sure, there's a level of risk. But wouldn't you rather take the risk on something that could be something way more than whatever you're spending it on, right? So I'm not saying live like a pauper, But at some point, you have enough money to live the best lifestyle that you need to. And now you got to transition the focus into creating income-producing assets. So hopefully that helps to just kind of put, like, this is part of the game, but it's a bigger game we're playing.
Makes perfect sense. There's a lot to be said for years lived well, and there's nothing wrong with taking European vacations should you choose to. But thinking about tomorrow, which will eventually come, is very, very important. And I believe that a lot of people do not put much emphasis on that because of maybe a financially strapped childhood. And then we tried to make up for. So I grew up middle class in Soviet Union, which means we were all equally poor.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my friends came from the same background. So when somebody makes it big, they usually start really living it up. Maybe without really having that foresight that, hey, that future will occasionally come. This business that you're enjoying today, tomorrow may not be here. Or tomorrow it could take a serious economic dive, and the income that you're seeing today may diminish or evaporate completely. So that thinking, it just, I heard recently, I read it somewhere, that God loves balance. If today is great, tomorrow is going to offset today. So,
well, hopefully that tomorrow is not tomorrow, but you know, hopefully you get a good run before that.
Plan for things, right? That's why we have 401ks. That's why we have IRAs. That's why we have investment properties. That's why we have other people's businesses that people can invest into with their excess income. And that's why we all, I believe, need a higher level financial IQ, which my partner and I had a rude awakening to this January when we looked at our statements and we're like, this much money to the IRS? This much money to the IRS. Have we been smart about it? No, we haven't. So let's start talking to a tax strategist. Let's figure this out. So we do things legally. We also do not like it. We read about it and we're like, these are not loopholes. This is tax code that some people like to say it was written by rich people for the rich people. But the truth of the matter is you don't have to be rich, quote unquote, to enjoy some of the same benefits as rich people do. I read this one example that it was just absolutely astonishing. It was about Mitt Romney. I don't know if he's still a senator. He at least used to be a senator from the state of Utah, who opened a Roth IRA account in the late 90s. And I don't know what the max investment amount into Roth IRA was at the time. I think today it's something like $7,500 per year. It's low.
Mm-hmm.
And in 12 years, that Roth IRA account grew to $102 million, tax-free. And it was apparently a well-published case study. Mm-hmm. And people were asking, how do you go from a few $1,000 investment into a nine-figure value portfolio?
It's now over $100 million.
Now it's over $100 million. And the simple truth was that there is a way, if you know how to do it, and it takes us tax strategies, to invest into a startup. It could be a relatively small investment. Put that investment into Roth IRA. And if that startup blows up and becomes a big company, all of those gains you get to enjoy tax-free. But you have to know this stuff. Most people who would invest into other business, and it has to be C Corp, and there are certain other requirements that have to be satisfied, and it has to be a certain type of financial institution that would carry investment or equity or shares of a small business in the Roth. But all of that is available. You just have to know about it. And my partner and I, until a few weeks ago, didn't. So we're like,
yeah, you're talking about a self-directed IRA, and it's very complex. To run very a business complex within a self-directed IRA doesn't skirt all the rules because there's a separate tax for an income-producing business that's within an IRA. So you definitely want to have a long conversation with somebody who knows what they're talking about when you're exploring something like this. But sure, the possibilities are there. When my daughters worked in the summer when they were 16, I made a deal with them. They you know, they're allowed to put up to 100% of their income into a Roth IRA as long as they don't go over the max. They weren't earning enough to go over the max. And I made a deal with them and I said, if you put up to 50% of your income into the Roth, I will match it. So one of my daughters did that for two summers and she ended up with 12 shares in Facebook.
What year was that?
She's now 24, so 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
She bought those shares for about $110, $120 a share. Those shares are now worth, what, 700 plus per share? Mm-hmm. Sitting in a Roth, some 16-year-old, now 24-year-old, right? But it's less about, oh my God, it's not like an astounding amount of money, right? But she more than quadrupled her investment. But more importantly, she learned some really, really important lessons. Saving, investing, time value of money. Those lessons are with her for life. Mm-hmm. You as a business owner have the opportunity, if you have young kids below the age of 18, to pass tax-free money to them that could then go into a Roth IRA that can grow for the rest of their lives by simply paying them up to the standard deduction amount. Which, and if you're a Schedule C operator, 16, what's that?
I think this year it's about 16,000. So you can pay
whatever you say. I don't have any of my tax tables in front of me. I'm going to make believe I don't know. But yeah, it's a significant amount of money, right? It's not huge, right? That's not going to change your world. But it is one of the strategies that you can use to pass money to somebody else tax-free, and then they can turn around and invest it tax-free. And honestly, if you don't want to do it for the sake of teaching your child, you could then use that money for their daily expenses. So essentially, it's a way of passing tax-free income to your household. And if you're like me and you're collecting kids and you have seven of them, then it creates a great opportunity, right? I mean, three of them are grown and out of the house, so they're out of the equation. I could only do it with four. And they have to be old enough to be able to work, right? So the only thing, we have IRS a case law going back to a six-year-old, right? So that's the youngest that we have case law to back up to say they're old enough to work. Honestly, I have a four-year-old, and he helps me package boxes to be shipped out to clients. He helps me shred papers. I would probably be willing to go out on a limb and say that I could make a case for the fact that he earned income there. But I'm not, I, as aggressive as I am, I'm not going to take a position that does, I don't have something to back it up, right? So I don't pay him on the books yet. But when I do,
but Moshe, right? you grab your phone and you record a video of him doing the job, doing the work. Then you have proof.
Yeah. So I think you can, right? I think you can. But even at six, right? From 6 to 18, that's a 12-year period where if you get your child to earn, you know, say $16,000 a year in your business, right? They're not working full time, right? But you can pay them a reasonable wage the same way. We can do reasonable compensation for them. So if it costs you $40 an hour to get clerical work in your business, there's no reason you can't pay your child $40 an hour, right? So we're not talking about a huge amount of time that they're spending in your business. You know, a couple of weekends and you know, a few nights a week and whatever, right? Like, we'll put that in. That can, you know, like, we and put that into a Roth IRA at the max, you know, and have them be able to buy themselves something with some of it. I mean, you talk about putting away for 12 years, $7,000 into a Roth. I mean, they're going to have well over six figures by the time that they enter into college. And, you know, and that's a game changer for somebody to start off life that way with that kind of boost. Imagine what an 18-year-old's $100,000 Roth is going to look like when they're 60.
Quite substantial, all legally, all ethically, following the rules, doing the right things with the help of right professionals. I'm sure some of the people who listen to this would be dismissive to the idea, but those who took interest in this and they're like, I spent over $100,000, I spent over $80,000, I spent over $50,000, $200,000, whatever it is that they spent on taxes, and now they're thinking, that tax bill could have been a lot lower. How do they connect with you and where should they start the conversation?
So that's a really good question. It's not like we have a website where you could go and buy services, but it starts with a tax assessment. You have to have a conversation with somebody on my team in order to do that. So, send an email to info@dreambuilderfinancial.com. And I'm sure Sasha will put that in whatever, show notes, info@dreambuilderfinancial.com, and just say, hey, I heard Moshe talking about tax assessment. I'd like to take one. We have two versions of that depending on your level of income and tax, and it comes with a guarantee. So we guarantee that you're going to get a certain level of tax savings, which is either four or five times what you're paying, depending on whether it's the smaller or the bigger version of that. Or we give you your money back, right? So if you happen to be working with somebody who's doing all the strategies, right? Like, you're already executing at the highest level when it comes to tax, and we do an assessment, we're like, well, we can't find anything here. We'll give you your money back. We've never given anybody their money back, but we're happy to stand by that guarantee, right? And so that you can invest in with confidence in this plan. Honestly, the tax assessment for some people is going to be more than they pay their tax preparer to prepare their tax return. And that's okay, right? Because to Sasha's point, right, your tax preparer is probably not saving all of these taxes for. They're not finding all these strategies for you. So it behooves you to find out what's out there, right? Just send us an email, ask for the tax assessment. We'll get you signed up. And the process is very simple. We take 3 years of tax returns. We have a conversation with you. We talk about what your goals and plans for this year, what your projections are. We plug it all in. We do an analysis and we come back with a written plan explaining every strategy, what the backups to it is in the IRS tax code, why it's legal, why we can do it, why we chose that one for you based on what you shared with us in that meeting. And at that juncture, you have a choice. You can choose to walk away knowing what your options are. You can choose to take that to your current accountant and have them implement those strategies for you, or you can choose to work with us. And we, at that moment, we'll present you with an opportunity to do that. And then you can, whatever works for you, right? Like we have no qualms with somebody coming, getting the assessment and going and running somewhere else to get it done. The reality is that some of these strategies, your accountant's not going to have access to, but that's okay, right? There's room for everybody. We have a client who's using us for the annual service, which includes tax preparation, but they like their accountant so much that we're just executing on the strategies. And when we're telling their tax accountant, here's what we've done, here's what you need to do in the tax return, and they're still filing their tax return because they happen to like that person so much. You do whatever works for you. We got no skin in the game here, right? Like, we're here for you to help you build generational wealth. And if you want to take the next step in that journey, then we're here to help you.
I love it. Certainty of outcome or your money back. Love it. Moshe, thank you for sharing all the insights. I think that for those people who will heed the advice and actually move forward and understand how to legally and ethically reduce their tax bill, this has a strong potential of being a life-changing experience. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show. I love it.
Thanks for listening to the Grow Law Firm podcast. If you liked the ideas shared in this episode, help a fellow lawyer out by sharing a link to the episode. This episode is powered by the team of experts in client attraction, growlawfirm.com. Do you want a complimentary growth plan for your law firm? Request it at growlawfirm.com/blueprint.